Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 57.
Wukong's just been kicked out by Tripitaka. Again.
Again, yeah. As you probably know if you're following the story. And how's he feeling? Well, annoyed and so annoyed and deeply frustrated. Just completely adrift.
Adrift, yeah.
Lost. Totally. He thinks about going home, Flower Fruit Mountain, you know. But straight away, he feels, well, embarrassed. He's worried his monkey followers will laugh at him for being inconsistent, going back on his word.
Right, like he failed.
Yeah, he thinks he's not the stuff of a real hero, someone steadfast, and he can't go to heaven, not really welcome for long stays. He's too ashamed to face the immortals, and begging the Dragon King, that's just beneath him. He's kind of run out of places to go, respectably anyway.
He sounds completely stuck, doesn't he? Nowhere feels right. But even with all that pride and feeling lost, the text says he decides to go back to Tripitaka anyway.
It does. It's quite a turn, but it's crucial. He has its thought and it's like, all right, I'll still go see my master, because that path, you know, the pilgrimage, that's still the right way, the way to enlightenment.
So deep down, he still believes in the quest.
It seems so. Despite everything, the frustration, the humiliation, he sees that as his real path.
Okay, so he swallows that massive pride of his and heads back. The text says he apologizes.
Yep. He says, like, forgive your disciple this time. And he promises again, you know, I'll obey. I'll protect you all the way west.
After everything Wukong's just been wrestling with,
How
does Tripitaka take this apology, this pledge?
It's immediate. And honestly, it's shockingly harsh. The text just says he doesn't answer at all. Not a single word.
Wow.
Instead, he just, boom, starts reciting the tight fillet spell.
And not just like a quick reminder either.
Oh, no. The text makes a point of saying he really goes at it.
Ah.
Back and forth, over and over. It says he recites it, say noise, more than 20 times.
20 times? You can just imagine the agony.
Absolutely. The effect is described as brutal. Wukong's cursed, forced to the ground, the hoop digging in.
An inch deep into his head.
About an inch deep into his flesh, yeah. It's incredibly graphic about the pain in the master's control.
Ouch. Okay, so after inflicting that kind of pain, Tripitaka finally stops. Does he soften up at all then? Any explanation?
Zero softening. He is completely unforgiving. He basically demands, oh, pa, you need to come back, which is like, if you're not going back where you came from, why are you still here bothering me?
Cold. Ice cold.
And Wukong, even in agony, he pleads, tries to reason with him. He points out, look, I could go elsewhere, but you can't get to the West without me.
Exactly. He's still trying to assert his value, how essential he is, even then.
But Tripitaka's having none of it, is he? Even that argument. Not even slightly. He's furious by now. He just yells, oh, six sheep, those VVUR warriors us.
Which means?
It's a heavy accusation. You monkey, all your killing and harming life, it's implicated me so much. I absolutely, definitely don't need you anymore.
Oof. Completely dismissing him.
Totally. Shuts down the whole you need me thing. Whether I can get there or not is none of your business. Just go. Hurry up. Get out.
And then comes the threat.
Yeah, and this is the really chilling bit. He threatens him.
Oh, he says, what now?
Wait around a little longer and I'll start reciting the mantra again. And this time I absolutely won't stop. I'll squeeze your brains right out.
Wow. Squeeze his brains out. That's the ultimate threat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Using the hoop lethally.
It shows just how deep Tripitaka's rage goes this time. Absolute refusal to forgive.
So Wukong, he's in agony. He's just been threatened with death by his own master. What can he even do?
Well, the text says he's in pain beyond endurance. And he sees it clearly now, his master's heart. It will absolutely not change. There's nothing left for him to do in that moment. The text says he gets back on his cloud and leaves.
And this is where it gets really interesting. Given he felt he had nowhere else to go earlier, where does he go now?
Right. In that moment of just utter rejection and despair, he has this sudden thought. This monk, meaning Tripitaka, has wronged my heart. I'll go to Mount Luogia, that's Guanyin's place, and tell Bodhisattva Guanyin about this.
So he's going over Tripitaka's head, straight to the authority figure who gave Tripitaka the hoop in the first place.
Precisely. A direct appeal.
And he gets there fast, right? The text mentions his speed.
Incredibly fast. Under an hour, it says, he reaches the South Sea, Mount Luogia, he meets Musa, then Sutana.
And how does that meeting with Sutana go? Is it smooth?
Not exactly smooth sailing, so Han agreed to him, okay, but then he kind of makes this joke. He says, laughing, something like, what a tricky mouth monkey. Just like that time I caught Tripitaka and you tricked me. He's bringing up their past, an old incident.
Oh boy. Probably not the best time for a joke, given Wukong's state.
Definitely not. Wukong, who's already full of pain and anger from Tripitaka, he just explodes.
At Sudhana.
Yeah. All that pent-up fury comes out. He yells at Sudhana, calls him an ungrateful little beast and truly foolish. He basically shouts, hey, I helped Guan Yin subdue you, helped you find enlightenment, and now you dare be rude to me.
He pulls rank, in a way.
Absolutely. And he clarifies, look, I'm here to ask for help, not to Izeh, not to accuse anyone, implying Sudhana's joke is just kicking him when he's down.
Okay, so Wukong's clearly not taking any disrespect right now. How does Sudhana react to that outburst?
He backpedals fast, apologizes, calls Wukong a quick-tempered or impatient monkey, says, hey, I was just kidding.
Just a joke, yeah, right.
Pretty much. And right then, a white parrot shows up. That's the signal the Bodhisattva is summoning them.
So they go to see Guanyin, and the text describes Wukong when he finally sees her.
It's quite powerful, yeah. He bows down, and it says,
he just breaks down completely.
Completely. Couldn't stop the tears, like a spring, just crying loudly. All the pain, the rejection, the humiliation, it just pours out of him in front of her.
That's quite a contrast to his usual bravado.
It really is. Guanyin has him helped up, asks gently what's wrong, promises she'll help him out.
So what's the heart of his complaint to her? How does he lay out what Tripitaka did?
He really lets it all out. Asks her, you know, did I ever suffer like this before you disciplined me? He talks about protecting Tripitaka, risking his life constantly. He compares it to, like, snatching a bone from a tiger's mouth, pulling scales off a dragon, incredibly dangerous stuff.
All for the quest.
All for the quest, hoping for enlightenment. But instead, he says Tripitaka is Fukoka, meaning Tripitaka has.
Turned his back on righteousness, forgotten all kindness, completely lost sight of good karma, and just failed to tell right from wrong. Failed to see Wukong's suffering. He feels utterly betrayed, basically. Mm-hmm. Unjustly treated.
That is a really strong accusation against his own master's character. How does Guanyin react to hearing all this? Does she just agree?
No, she doesn't just immediately side with him. She asks for the details. The Sue reason of right and wrong, the full story behind it all.
She wants the context.
Exactly. So Wukong tells her the whole story about killing those bandits recently.
And this is where Guanyin brings in another angle, isn't it? Thinking about the bigger picture.
Right. She considers Tripitaka's side, too. Reminds Wukong, look, your master's under orders from the emperor to be a compassionate monk. He's sworn not to take lives.
But she also looks at Wukong's actions, right? Yes, she turns it back on him, too. She asks him, basically, okay, Wukong, you have all this incredible power. Why do you have to kill so many bandits? And she makes this really important distinction. She says, okay, bandits are bad, but they're human beings.
Different from demons.
Totally different from demons or monsters. Killing demons, that's a merit, that's good work on this journey. But killing humans, even bad ones, she calls that...
your unkindness.
Yeah.
Your lack of compassion.
Exactly, your lack of compassion. She points out, look, with your power, you could have just scared them off. That would have saved Tripitaka all the distress, avoided this whole mess. So based on what she calls a fair discussion or assessment, she concludes that Wukong's action in this case was not good act.
So a very balanced view.
Yeah.
She sees Wukong's power, Tripitaka's vows, but criticizes Wukong's method when dealing with humans. How does Wukong take that judgment?
He kind of accepts it, acknowledges maybe his action was laureate, not good in that sense. But he immediately pivots. He argues, okay, even if it wasn't perfect, I should be allowed to make up for my faults with all the good deeds I've done. I shouldn't just be thrown out like this.
He feels the punishment doesn't fit the crime, especially given his track record.
Precisely. And then he makes this really desperate plea to her. He says, I'm begging you, Bodhisattva, show great compassion. Please recite the loose fillet spell. Take this golden hoop off me. I'll give it back to you. Just let me escape back to Flower Fruit Mountain.
He wants out. He wants the hoop off and to just go home. He's done.
He's asking for freedom from the quest and the pain.
So the big question, does Guanyin have this loose fillet spell? Can she just take the hoop off?
The text is crystal clear here. Guanyin actually laughs. Yeah. She explains, look, the Buddha gave me the tight fillet spell, along with the robe and the staff, specifically for the scripture taker, for Tripitapa to control you. And then she says it plainly, there is no such thing as a loose fillet spell.
Oh, so there's no easy way out of the hoop. It's stuck on him.
Pretty much. No off switch from her.
Okay, so Guanyin can't help him escape the hoop. What's Wukong's next plan then? Still wants out, right?
Yeah, he's determined. He says, okay, fine, I'll go straight to the top. I'll go to the Buddha himself in the West and ask him for a loose fillet spell.
He's not giving up on getting free.
Not yet. But Guanyin stops him, tells him not to go.
And what she does next is, well, changes everything, doesn't it?
It really does. It's fascinating. She offers to check the ayah, basically, the good and bad fortune, the outlook of the whole situation.
Wukong's probably thinking, it's already pretty bad for me.
Right. He says something like that, but Guanyin clarifies, no, I'm checking on Tripitaka's situation, your master's.
And what does her divine sight, her wisdom eye, reveal?
She sits, concentrates, observes the whole universe, you know. And immediately she reports back to Wukong. She says, Wukong, your master, right now, this very moment, is on the verge of suffering physical harm, and he will come looking for you before long.
Wow. Immediate danger for Tripitaka, just as Wukong leaves him.
Exactly. The timing is crucial.
So Guanyin sees this imminent danger. What does she tell Wukong to do now? He can't just rush off.
No, she gives him a direct order. Stay right here. Don't go anywhere.
Stay put. Why?
She promises him, I will go talk to Tripitaka. I'll arrange for him to take you back. You'll continue the quest. You'll reach enlightenment.
So she's going to intervene and fix things.
That's the plan she lays out. And the text says, Wukong. He basically has to obey. He doesn't dare argue or act rashly anymore. He just waits there by her lotus throne.
So just to be clear, Wukong is now waiting at Guanyin's place, specifically told to wait, because the text explicitly says his master is in danger and will need him soon.
Correct. That's his situation, according to the text.
Okay, so while Wukong is on standby with Guanyin, the text shifts back to Tripitaka and the others, Pigsy and Sandy. What's happening with them right after Wukong was banished?
Right. The narrative jumps back. After sending Wukong away in that rage, Tripitaka, Pigsy, Sandy, and the horse, they travel on, but not far. Less than 50 li, the text says.
Oh, short distance.
Very short. And Tripitaka gets hungry and thirsty. He asks, okay, who's going to find us some food?
And Pigsy steps up. That's a bit surprising sometimes.
It is. Pigsy volunteers, says he'll look for a village nearby. Tripitaka gets off the horse. Pigsy looks around, but sees nothing. Only mountains.
Dude, not a single house in sight.
No luck.
Nope. He comes back, reports, no food anywhere near here.
Okay, so no food. What about water? That's essential too. Tripitaka is really suffering from thirst now, so he asks for water instead. Pigsy volunteers again. Says he'll get some from a stream on a southern mountain.
Right.
Sandy gives him the alms bowl, and off Pigsy goes on his cloud again.
You mentioned the text raises a question here. Why couldn't Pigsy find anything?
Well, at this exact point in the passage, it doesn't explicitly say the area is, like, magically hidden or anything. It just states Pigsy's perception. Only mountains. It really just emphasizes how isolated and dependent they are, setting the stage for Tripitaka's vulnerability.
So Tripitaka's left waiting again, waiting for Pigsy to bring back water. How's he holding up?
Not well at all. He waits a long time, and the text describes him as pitifully suffering, dry mouth, parched tongue, finding it hard to endure.
He must be physically quite weak by now.
Extremely. And there's a poem included here in the text that really underlines his weakness without Wukong. It talks about his spirit and essence failing him. It mentions the failure of Feifia and the concepts tied to spiritual strength and progress towards enlightenment. Basically, without his protector, his physical and even spiritual resilience is collapsing.
He's completely exposed. Sandy sees this, right? Sees the master suffering and Pigsy taking forever.
Yes. Sandy sees how bad Tripitaka is, so he takes charge of the luggage, makes sure the horse is secure, and he tells Tripitaka, look, I'll go fiwa, which means I'll go hurry the water back, essentially go find Pigsy and get him moving.
And Tripitaka's reaction?
The text says he's tearfully speechless. He just nods. He's too weak or distressed to even speak.
Wow. So Sandy leaves too, heading south on his cloud.
Yep. Which leaves Tripitaka completely, utterly alone on the road.
In that state of suffering. The text uses the phrase, sirokinet. Alone, agonizing, extremely distressed. What happens next in this absolute low point?
Right when he's in that state of despair, that, he hears something. Looks up.
Sun Wukong.
Kneeling by the road.
What does it do? What does it say?
Holds out a cup, a porcelain cup full of cool water. And it speaks, saying, Master Si, without old grandson Sun here, you can't even get water. Here's a nice cup of cool water. Drink this first, quench your thirst. Then I'll go get us some food.
You do need me. Offering help when Tripitaka needs it most.
Exactly. The words echo his earlier plea.
So Tripitaka, he's desperately thirsty, abandoned, suffering. How does he react to Wukong offering him exactly what he needs?
You'd think he'd be relieved, right? But no. Despite the terrible thirst, his anger and rejection from before hold firm, he refuses. Point blank.
Refuses the water.
Flat out refuses. Says, I'll die of thirst right here. I accept my fate. I don't need you anymore. Just go away.
Wow. Still completely set against him, even in that state.
Utterly rejecting any help.
Does Wukong persist?
Yes. Briefly. Without me, you cannot get to the West.
Same argument as before. Tripitaka's response.
Just as firm. Whether I can get there or not is none of your business, you rascal monkey. Why do you keep bothering me? Total dismissal.
And this rejection is the final straw.
It seems so. Because this is where the text describes that chilling change.
Sun Wukong.
Changed face, became angry and resentful. The helpful demeanor just vanishes, replaced by rage. He curses Tripitaka really fiercely.
Ew, you ruthless bald monk, you treat me so cheaply.
And then...
the text says that Wukong throws the cup down.
Ooh, hard enough to knock the master out cold.
Unable to speak.
Attacked his own master.
Knocked him out.
Brutally. And then the final insult, really. And a practical blow to the quest. Grabs the two blue felt bundles.
Their luggage, their supplies.
Yeah, their essential belongings. Probably money, credentials, maybe any scriptures they'd already collected. Everything they need to travel. Takes the bundles, gets on a cloud, and flies off. Destination unknown. Leaving Tripitaka unconscious and robbed on the side of the road. Pigsy's turn to go begging, you know, right?
Right, so Pigsy heads down the mountain. He spots a house.
In a little valley, yeah. And immediately, he has this thought. He's like, okay, look, my face. My actual pig face. This is going to terrify people.
Yeah. He figures they'll just slam the door.
Exactly. So he thinks, I need to change. I got to transform.
And the transformation he picks, it's fascinating, isn't it? He doesn't just become, like, a regular guy.
No, not at all. The text says he turns into this sickly, consumptive, yellow, fatty monk. That's the description.
Wow. Specific.
Very. And he even makes sure he sounds the part, sort of groaning and puffing as he goes up to the door.
It tells you something right away, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
About Pigsy. He knows how he looks, but he's also got this theatrical streak.
Oh, absolutely. It's a blend of self-awareness and, yeah, very Pigsy solution.
So he calls out, putting on this whole act.
Right. Claims he's a poor monk from the east, going west. This master is, you know, hungry and thirsty out on the road.
And could they spare anything? Just leftovers?
Yeah, or even CA, that scorched rice from the pot bottom. He's not asking for much, supposedly.
Now, inside the house, it's just two women. The men are out.
Right, working. And they'd literally just finished cooking lunch, so they do have leftovers.
The woman who answers, she sees this frail-looking monk. Here's his story.
And honestly, she's probably a bit worried. Like, is this guy going to collapse and die right here on my doorstep? He looks that bad.
So maybe out of pity, maybe a bit of fear.
Probably a mix, yeah. She's actually pretty generous. Gives him a big, full bowl piled high with the leftovers and scorched rice.
Nice. Pigsy gets the food, changes back, presumably out of sight.
The text kind of implies he does it pretty quickly, yeah. Back to his usual self.
Yeah, starts heading back. Feeling pretty pleased, I imagine.
Oh, definitely. Mission accomplished, right.
But here's where things take that sudden, sharp turn.
Mm-hmm. He's walking back, happy with his bowl of food, and bumps into Sandy.
Sandy's coming from somewhere else, and he's noticed a stream nearby.
Yeah, and he points out the obvious, like, hey, there's perfectly good, clear water right here. Why didn't you grab some?
Good point. And Pigsy, always practical about the immediate stuff.
He's like, oh, yeah, tell you what.
You carry this rice. He tells Sandy to put it in his robe. Careful with the scorched bits.
Right, and I'll use the bowl to get the water. So they team up, and the text specifically says they were heading back happily together.
Happily, which makes the scene they stumble upon just gut-wrenching.
Absolutely shocking. They get back to where they left Tripitaka.
And he's face down on the ground.
Yeah.
Just collapsed in the dust.
And the white horse, it's broken free, totally freaking out, rearing, neighing, running around by the road.
And the luggage, the whole bundle, just gone.
Mm.
Vanished.
The shift from happily heading back to this, it's whiplash.
It really is. And the reactions, Pigsy and Sandy, couldn't be more different. This is where you really see their core natures, right?
Absolutely. Pigsy, his first reaction is just pure panic, Trotdoll. Stamping his feet, beating his chest, yelling like crazy.
And his immediate thought.
He jumps straight to a conclusion. This has got to be Wukong's followers. The remnants, the ones they chased off before, they came back, attacked the master, stole everything. That's his theory.
And his plan.
Yeah.
It's something else.
It's shockingly practical and kind of brutal. He just declares, yeah, cool. Let's just stop talking about this whole scripture quest right now. It's over.
Wow. So what's the actual plan then?
His proposal is, Sandy, you stay here, watch the master's corpse, as he calls it.
He assumes he's dead.
Instantly assumes he's dead. Pigsy will take the horse, ride to the nearest town, sell it for, some silver.
Okay.
Buy a coffin, bury Tripitaka, and then his words are stark. We each go our separate ways. We split up. Done.
That just reveals so much about Pigsy, doesn't it? The self-interest.
Totally. The quest is finished. The master's dead, he thinks. So cut your losses. Look out for number one. There's no grief for the mission itself. Just, okay, this failed. How do I survive?
Now contrast that with Sandy.
Oh, complete opposite. Sandy is utterly devastated. The text says he truly cannot bear to just abandon him.
He's loyal.
Deeply loyal. He gently turns Tripitaka over, puts his face close to his master's face, and just breaks down, weeping bitterly. Oh, tears everywhere.
And what's he lamenting?
He cries out about the quest. Oh, how can this be? We're abandoning it halfway, stopping in the middle of the road.
So for Sandy, it's about the mission, the loyalty to the master, and the quest.
Exactly. He's not thinking about selling horses or splitting up. He's mourning the loss, the failure of the sacred goal. It's such a powerful contrast to Pigsy's immediate calculation.
But in that moment of grief, as Sandy's turning him over, getting close,
he makes a huge discovery. Tripitaka isn't dead. He can feel hot air coming from his mouth and nose. And his chest is warm. He's alive.
So Pigsy rushes over. They help him sit up.
Right. He's weak, maybe groaning a bit. But the first words out of his mouth.
What does he say?
It's a curse. Aka curse. He yells, that wicked ape, he's beaten me to death.
Wicked ape. They know who he means.
Oh, yeah. Sandy and Pigsy immediately ask, which ape? Which Betty A? But it's pretty clear.
So Tripitaka confirms it was Wukong.
Yep. He explains, as soon as they left, that Wukong came back to bother him again.
And Tripitaka refused to take him back.
Adamantly refused. Stood firm, so Wukong just hit him with the staff. Just one blow, but enough to knock him out, clearly.
Apparently. And then he stole the luggage bundle, the whole, snatched it, and ran.
So Pigsy's theory about the followers, completely wrong.
Instantly disproven. It was Wukong himself.
And once Pigsy realizes the master isn't dead, his fear just vanishes, right?
Poof. Gone, replaced by that classic Pigsy anger.
How's it scribed?
Gnashing his teeth, fire rising in his heart. How dare that monkey attack the master, steal their stuff. He's ready to charge off right now and get it back. All action again. But Sandy steps in.
Once again, Sandy is the voice of calm, practical reason. He's like, whoa, hold on. Let's not just rush off.
Right, first things first.
Exactly. Master needs help. Let's go back to that house, Sorshia, the one they just passed. Ask for hot tea. Rishian. Warm up the rice Pigsy got. Rishian.
Help Tripitaka recover before chasing Wukong.
Yeah, Sisha. Take care of the immediate problem. Sensible plan.
And Pigsy agrees.
To his credit, yeah, he actually agrees this time. So they help the weak Tripitaka onto the horse. Good thing it didn't run off.
True. So they head back to the house. Pigsy's got the bowl. Sandy's got the rice in his robe.
And they get back there, and the old woman who gave Pigsy the food, she sees this whole group coming.
And gets nervous again, tries to hide.
Exactly. She ducks away.
So Sandy has to explain.
Yeah, Sandy steps forward, very politely explains, we're monks, east to west, master's unwell, need some hot tea or soup for him.
But the woman, She's totally confused now, right? Because of Pigsy's earlier trick.
Completely confused. She's like, wait a minute. A sickly, consumptive monk already came here just a bit ago, said he was from the east going west, got food and left. How is there another group?
Pigsy's disguise comes back to bite them.
It really does. So Tripitaka has to step in. Still weak, he dismounts with help, bows to her.
And explains the whole situation.
Yeah. The journey, the three disciples, but that his fierce and disobedient first disciple, Wukong, was sent away.
But came back secretly, attacked him, stole the luggage.
Right. And he asks if they can just rest there temporarily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just until the luggage is back. Promises they won't stay long.
But she's still stuck on the two groups thing.
Still confused. But a sickly, yellow, fatty monk already came. She repeats it. How can there be two groups?
And this is where Pigsy has to fess up.
Yeah. He can't help himself. He starts laughing. Huh? Finds it amusing and admits, okay, yeah, that was me.
What reason does he give?
He says he transformed because he was afraid her family would be scared by his real face, the big mouth, the big ears, and wouldn't give him any food.
And the proof.
He points to Sandy's robe. Bukitsufino. Isn't that scorched rice in my brother's robe the exact same stuff you gave me?
Clever. So the woman recognizes it.
She does. Recognizes her rice. The pieces finally click.
And she lets them in.
Yeah, the confusion clears up. She stops being hesitant, invites them in, immediately boils a pot of hot tea for them.
Good. So Sandy uses the tea.
To soak the cold rice, Hino makes it edible for Tripitaka. The master eats, recovers, stabilizes after a while.
Okay, so the immediate crisis, master down, no refuge is over. But the big problem remains.
The luggage. Gone. Stolen by Wukong. So the question is, who's going to go get it back?
Pigsy volunteers. Eagerly.
Very eagerly. Let me go. He even says he knows the way to Flower Fruit Mountain, Water Curtain Cave.
Because he went looking for Wukong before.
Exactly. Since he remembers the way from last time Tripitaka sent Wukong away. Maybe trying to redeem himself after the split-up plan.
Could be. But Tripitaka, he rejects the offer, right?
He does. Thinks carefully and says no to Pigsy.
Why? What's the reasoning?
It's pretty sound, actually. That ape never got along with you, Pigsy. He says Pigsy speaks rudely, so we who.
True enough.
And that it budang, the slightest disagreement, a couple of words wrong, and Wukong Wucha, he'll just start beating you up again.
Probably accurate. So he chooses Sandy instead.
Yep. Let Weijing go.
And Sandy's reaction.
Immediate acceptance. True to form. I'll go. No hesitation.
Now Tripitaka gives Sandy some very specific instructions. This seems important.
Crucial instructions, yeah. He tells him first, you have to observe the situation. See how things actually are when you get there.
It's not just go get the bag.
No, it's reconnaissance first. Then, or your Wukong is willing to just give you the bundle back.
Then what?
To Wukong. Just pretend to thank him and take it. No big deal. No argument. Keep it simple.
Okay. But what if he doesn't agree? Which seems likely.
Right. And this is the key part. Who, if he's not willing, then absolutely do not argue or fight with him.
No conflict.
Zero conflict. Instead, the instruction is bypass Wukong entirely. Go straight to the Bodhisattva. Mount Luogia in the Southern Sea.
Go tell her what happened.
Exactly. Tell her the situation and ask her to get the luggage back. Ooh. Basically escalate it. Admit Wukong might be too much for them to handle directly.
That shows a certain realism, maybe. Acknowledging their limits.
And the hierarchy, yeah. Some problems need divine intervention.
So Sandy agrees to all this.
Mm.
Follows every instruction.
Yep. But before he leaves, he gives Pigsy his own instructions.
Oh, really? What does Sandy tell Pigsy?
He tells him, you absolutely must not be troublesome or cause problems while I'm gone.
Good advice for Pigsy.
Definitely. And Tune, take good care of the master. And also, don't be wild or cause trouble in this house.
Why that specific warning?
He adds the reason, so they'll keep getting food. Practical Sandy. He promises he'll be back soon.
Cool. How does Pigsy take it?
He says he gets it. Yes, out. I understand. But he adds one last, very Pigsy line, sort of a warning or worry.
What's that?
He says, Dune, Whether you manage to get it back or not, make sure you're back by morning.
Okay.
And then this idiom. Don't let it become like a carrying pole loaded with wood that breaks at both ends.
Meaning, don't lose everything.
Exactly. Don't fail to get the luggage and also disappear yourself, Sandy, leaving us with nothing and nobody. It's pure pigsy fear of total loss, total material failure.
Classic pigsy. Grounded in the practical. So Sandy leaves.
Yep. Uses his magic, flies off towards East Victory Divine Continent, where Flower Fruit Mountain is.
And the passage ends with those poetic lines.
Yeah, they really capture the whole mood and the underlying themes. Bodies here, spirits flown, like a furnace with no fire. How can you make the elixir? The group's incomplete, lacking something vital.
Mm.
Yellow woman, maybe Earth, maybe Sandy, leaves her master, Tripitaka, to seek the metal elder, Wukong. Wood mother, probably Pigsy, relies on the teacher, Tripitaka, despite his sickly state. It's that five elements allegory.
Right, the elements interacting.
Going now. Don't know when he'll return. Hard to estimate when he'll be back. Really emphasizes the uncertainty.
And the last one.
Ezito. The five elements clash. Their relationships are out of whack, disharmonious. They have to wait for the heart ape, Wukong, to re-enter the gate to come back into the fold. So, Sand Monk is heading to Flower Fruit Mountain.
3 days and nights straight to get to the Eastern Ocean. And it describes this intense scenery, like black mist, the sun looking cold. But he's focused. He's heading for the Water Curtain Cave, Wukong's old base.
Mm. He finally gets there, to Flower Fruit Mountain. What's it like when he arrives?
It's noisy, a huge racket. The text calls it roaring and rambling, basically. Countless monkey spirits making a din. And then he spots him, Sun Wukong, sitting there on a stone platform. But he's not, like, fighting or messing around. He's reading.
Reading.
Yeah, reading a document aloud, really intensely focused. It even says he finishes it and then starts reading it all over again.
Okay, this is where it gets really weird. It's not just any document he's obsessing over, is it? He's reading the actual imperial decree, the travel passport.
Exactly, the official paperwork from the Tang Emperor himself. This thing is, you know, the authorization for the entire journey. It's addressed from Emperor Li to Master Qin Wenzong, the Tang monk. States clearly he's commanded to go west to Great Lion Monastery to get scriptures from Buddha Tathagata.
Right, the whole point of the mission.
Mm-hmm. And it gives the backstory, the emperor's illness, his trip to the underworld, coming back, wanting to do good deeds, and how Guanyin showed up.
Guanyin pointing the way west for the scriptures that save souls.
Precisely. It lays out the spiritual purpose.
Yeah.
But then, and this is key for what Wukong does next, it lists the disciples.
Ah, so it names names.
Yes. First disciple, Sun Wukong. Second disciple, Zhu Wuneng, that's Barji. Third disciple, Xia Wujing, Sand Monk himself. It's the official team roster, dated and everything.
So Sand Monk hears Wukong reading his master's passport with his name in it. He must have been completely shocked. What does he do?
He can't help himself. He just shouts out, you know, confronts him directly. Why are you reading the master's passport? Something like that.
And Wukong's reaction?
It's immediate and strange.
Oh.
He looks up the text as his face changes. He doesn't greet Sand Monk or anything. He just yells to his monkeys, seize him.
Seize him, like he doesn't know him.
Exactly. Demands to know who this stranger is. How dare he approach the immortal cave? It's incredibly jarring.
So is he pretending or?
It's unclear from the text if it's pretense or if Wukong is so far gone he genuinely doesn't recognize him in that moment. Either way, it's bad. Sand Monk sees this complete change in attitude and tries to reason with him. Very deferential at first.
Okay. What's his approach?
He explains what happened from his point of view, admits the master was maybe short-tempered, maybe wrong to curse Wukong and send him away. He even says, you know, maybe he and Baji didn't do enough to smooth things over.
Take some responsibility.
A little, yeah. Then he recounts how while they were off getting food, Wukong came back, the master still rejected him, and then Wukong beat the master unconscious and stole the luggage.
Right, the core problem.
So Sand Monk basically begs him, come back. Forgive the master. Remember why you joined this quest in the first place, the grace of liberation, getting freed from their past troubles. He asks him to rejoin them, go west, achieve true fruit, you know, enlightenment.
That's a pretty strong appeal to their shared goal and history. But what if Wukong's just too angry? Does Sand Monk have a backup plan?
He does. It's kind of desperate. He says, look, if you really won't come back, the anger's too deep, just give us the luggage. especially the passport. Let us finish the journey.
Let the rest of them try on their own.
Yeah. He even frames it like, you can just stay here, live happily ever after in your mountain kingdom. It's a win-win, he calls it.
Trying to find any way forward.
Yeah.
How does Wukong take this heartfelt plea?
He just laughs.
Yeah.
Coldly. So Sam Monk's arguments are completely off base, not to his liking at all.
Mm.
And he clarifies he didn't beat the master and grab the luggage because he hates going west or just wants to hang out on his mountain.
Okay. So why did he do it? This is the big reveal, isn't it?
This is the absolute core of it. He says now that he's thoroughly read the passport, he's going to go west by himself.
By himself.
Yep. Get the scriptures alone, bring them back to the east, achieve success solo,
mm-hmm.
and then get this. Make the people of the southern continent set him up as like an ancestor figure. Gain internal fame for himself.
Wow. That's not just abandoning the mission. That's a complete hostile takeover for personal glory.
Exactly. It's pure ego. He's completely ditched the spiritual quest for, essentially, celebrity status. He's using the official documents as a roadmap for his own fame project.
Sand Monk must be just reeling. How does he even respond to something that audacious?
He tells him straight up, those words are improper. Totally wrong. He argues, look, there's never been any story about you, Sun Wukong, getting scriptures by yourself. That's not how this works.
He tries to bring him back to the reality of the mission.
Yeah, reminds him of the origin story he knows. Buddha made the scriptures. Guan Yin came east looking for a specific person. A scripture seeker. And they, Wukong, Baji, Sand Monk, their whole purpose was to suffer hardships to protect that specific seeker.
Right, protect the Tang Monk. He brings up who the master actually is, doesn't he?
He does. Reminds Wukong what Guanyin told them the seeker is Jin Chanti, Buddha's own student, exiled for messing up, reborn in the East. This whole journey is his path back.
His path, his cultivation.
Exactly. And all the monsters and problems were put there specifically to test the master and to give the disciples a chance to earn merit by protecting him. It's all interconnected. So Sand Monk's logic is simple. No Tang Monk, no scriptures. Buddha won't just hand them over to you. Your plan is a total waste of time.
Seems like a pretty airtight argument, grounded in everything they've been told. How can Wukong possibly argue against that?
Wukong just brushes him off,
yeah.
Calls him ignorant, says he only knows half the story. And then he hits him with the really wild part. He says, you say you have a Tang Monk to protect, don't I?
Wait, what? He claims he has a Tang Monk too?
Yes, right there. He says he's already selected another true monk there in the cave, and he will support this monk himself.
He found a replacement monk.
Apparently.
Yeah.
He even says he's planning to leave tomorrow and tell Sand Monk he can stick around and see for himself.
Yeah.
And he calls out, bring out the teacher.
They do. What does this fake pilgrimage team look like?
They bring them out. First, a white horse, like the masters, then someone transformed to look exactly like Tang Sanzang.
Unbelievable.
Then someone who looks like Baji, carrying the luggage. And finally, someone transformed into Sand Monk, holding the monster-taming staff.
No! A fake Sand Monk.
A fake Sand Monk. The text is clear. These were all monkey spirits using transformation magic. It's a complete mirror image counterfeit of the real team.
Okay, seeing a fake version of himself standing there with his weapon. That must have just pushed Sand Monk over the edge.
Absolutely. He completely loses it. He shouts out who he is, the real Kos. Xiao Wujing warns the fake one not to be so impudent. And then boom, no hesitation. He swings his staff, hits the fake Sand Monk right on the head, kills him instantly.
Just like that.
Just like that. And the body immediately reverts, turns back into a dead monkey spirit.
Wow. So Wukong sees this, sees his fake disciple killed. What happens next?
Wukong is furious.
Yeah.
Absolutely enraged. He attacks Sand Monk with his own golden staff. All the other monkeys swarm Sand Monk too.
So it's a full-on brawl.
It is.
Yeah.
But Sand Monk is powerful, remember. He fights his way out, manages to break through the monkey horde, and escapes on a cloud.
Where does he go?
He decides he has to report this whole insane situation.
Yeah.
He heads off to find the Bodhisattva Guanyin.
Okay, so Sand Monk escapes to get help. What does Wukong do? Does he chase him?
No, he lets him go. Instead, he goes back into the cave, and this is, well, it's pretty grim. He orders his monkeys to drag the body of the monkey. They kill the fake Sand Monk aside.
Okay.
And then he gives this absolutely shocking order. Skin it. Cook the meat.
Cook the fake Sand Monk.
Yes. Cook the meat and serve it up with coconut wine and grape wine for him and all the other monkeys to eat.
That's horrific. Cannibalism, essentially, of one of his own kind disguised as his former companion.
It's incredibly disturbing. And he's not even done. Right after that, he picks another monkey spirit, one good at shapeshifting.
Don't tell me.
Tells it to transform into a new sand monk and starts training it immediately to get ready for his journey west tomorrow. Chaseng.
Fled all the way to Luoya Mountain.
Exactly. Luoya Mountain in the South Sea.
Yeah.
And the source paints this picture of total serenity. It mentions vibrant flowers, peacocks, cranes.
A real contrast then to whatever he just left. The source even mentions a fish listening to scriptures.
Yeah, leaping through waves, listening in. It's meant to feel incredibly peaceful, spiritual, a safe haven.
Chaseng sets foot on Luoya Mountain. What's the very first thing that happens?
Well, you'd think he'd maybe collapse in relief or search for Guanyin, but no. Right away, he bumps into Muza and, quite unexpectedly, the real Sun Wukong.
The real Wukong. And instead of being relieved to see his fellow disciple, Chaseng, well, he explodes.
Completely. The text says he's furious, tries to attack Wukong on the spot. He's absolutely convinced Wukong is behind all the trouble.
Wow. Okay, so instant conflict. Does anyone step in?
Thankfully, yes. Guanyin is there. She intervenes pretty quickly, stops the fight, and says, you know, let's hear Chaseng's side first.
Smart move. So Chaseng gets his chance to explain. What does he tell her? What happened?
He just lets it all out, this urgent, almost frantic report. He starts by reminding her of Wukong's recent violent streak.
Like killing those highwaymen.
Yes, and then apparently escalating things by killing a whole group of bandits, wiping them out.
And that's what triggered the big conflict with Tripitaka.
According to Chaseng, yes. He says Wukong showed Tripitaka a bloody head from the bandits, which, understandably, terrified the master.
So Tripitaka finally had enough.
Right. Scolded Wukong harshly and banished him. Well, Chaseng explains that Tripitaka needed water. He sent Pigsy first.
Yeah, huh?
Pigsy took too long, so Tripitaka sent Chaseng to go look for him or get water himself, according to Chaseng's account.
Hmm.
While they were both gone, Wukong supposedly came back.
And attacked Tripitaka.
That's what Chaseng reports.
Ew.
He says Wukong hit Tripitaka with his staff.
Out.
Stole the two blue felt bundles. The Sokka. Important luggage, it seems. Maybe supplies, maybe something sacred. A big deal.
So Chaseng and Pigsy return, find Tripitaka injured.
They help him, tend to his wounds, and then Chaseng, being loyal, decides he has to fix this. He heads straight for Flower Fruit Mountain.
Wukong's home base, to get the bundles back.
Exactly, to confront Wukong and retrieve the stolen items. He arrives. Wukong doesn't recognize Chaseng at all, which is impossible, their fellow disciples.
Very strange.
Even weirder, Chaseng says, this Wukong was just sitting there, repeatedly reading Tripitaka's travel document. The Hu.
The official document for the pilgrimage.
It's like he's studying it, trying to understand its significance, or maybe usurp it. That document represents the whole legitimacy of the quest.
So it suggests he's not just after the luggage, he's after the mission itself.
He declares he's done protecting Tripitaka.
Right.
Finished. Instead, he's going to go west, get the scriptures himself, bring them back east. And claim all the merit the Ud for himself. And then, get this, establish himself as an ancestor beat you. Basically, achieve eternal fame through this stolen quest.
That's breathtakingly arrogant. It completely twists the whole point of the pilgrimage, which is supposed to be spiritual, right? Not about personal glory.
Precisely. It's pure self-aggrandizement. Worldly fame, lineage, not enlightenment for all beings.
As Chaseng must be reeling. Does he question this? Like, how could you even get scriptures without Tripitaka?
He does ask that. You know, how could you do this without the ordained monk? Oh, he's got it all figured out. He claims he's already selected his own true monk, someone spiritually cultivated used to go with him and I dead.
He's replacing Tripitaka too, if this gets wilder.
It does. And then comes the absolute peak of the strangeness in Chaseng's report. The imposter reveals his own completely fake pilgrimage group, a white horse, just like Tripitaka's. A fake Tripitaka, a fake Pigsy, and the final shock for Chaseng.
Seeing a double of yourself, I can't even imagine. What does Chaseng do?
He recounts shouting something like, I'm Sha Hesheng, where did you come from? And he charges the fake Chaseng.
And they fight.
They do. And Chaseng quickly realizes this fake version of himself isn't even human. It's a monkey spirit. And then Chaseng says, the whole fake group led by Wukong attacked him.
Overwhelmed him.
Seems like it. He barely managed to escape with his life and fled straight to Guanyin on Luoya Mountain to report everything.
And he arrives thinking the real Wukong somehow beat him there and spun some story to Guanyin.
Yeah, that's his fear. That Wukong got there first and used his, you know, clever tongue to deceive the Bodhisattva.
Okay, so that's Chaseng's side. Dramatic, detailed, terrifying. How does Guanyin respond to this incredible story?
She listens patiently, but then she drops a bombshell. Very calmly, she points out a major problem with Sha Seng's timeline.
Which is?
She states, quite simply, that the real Sun Wukong has been right there with her on Luojia Mountain for the past 4 days.
4 days? But Sha Seng's story sounds like it just happened. The attack? The trip to Flower Fruit Mountain?
Exactly. 4 days. It's a solid alibi for the Wukong standing right there. It completely contradicts Sha Seng's account of Wukong being back with Tripitaka or at Flower Fruit Mountain so recently.
So, this throws everything into question. Who attacked Tripitaka? Who did Sha Seng meet? How does Guanyin propose sorting this mess out?
Her approach is direct. She tells the real Wukong, the one who's been with her, to go with Sha Seng back to Flower Fruit Mountain.
Send them both. Together.
Yes. And she gives them a guiding principle for the investigation. The source quotes her saying, "Truth is hard to destroy. Falsehood is easy to remove."
Basically, go see for yourselves. The truth will out.
Pretty much. Nah. Go confront the situation and reality should become clear.
Mm-hmm.